Hey, football fans, you want the real deal? The raw, unfiltered truth about everything going down in the NFL? Join Mark Schlereth, three-time Super Bowl champ, on the Stinkin' Truth podcast. He's breaking it all down for you. No punches pulled. From the game-changing moments that won or lost a game to the player evaluations, this is analysis you won't hear anywhere else. Mark's got you covered. So strap in and get ready for the ride, because this isn't your average football podcast. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, happy Monday, everybody. Ben and Woods, 97.3, The Fan. Welcome to July 1. May was dragging ass. June flew by. And now here we are on July 1st, a.k.a. my birthday month. So I hope everybody celebrates accordingly. It's good to be here with you guys. Hope you had a great weekend. I'm Woodsy. That's Paul Reindel, the executive producer. Good morning, Paulie.
Good morning, Chef.
Good morning, Chef, to you. And then our resident, sweet, sweet angel, guy worked his balls off last night till like midnight. Your friendly neighborhood sports anchor, for now, Ben Higgins.
Tired. Good morning. Yeah, a little bit, but I'm okay.
Back to the old school.
We are closer to 2025 than 2023 now.
This year's flown by.
Wow.
It's flown by. I mean, he said it on like May 6th. He just happened to drop, he goes, May is such a long month. I go, I've never really felt that way. And then about 3 weeks later, it was May 7th. And I'm like, Jesus, dude, you were dead on. Like, I'm in hell right now. I remember going, how many days hath May? And I like looked at my calendar. I'm like, we still have another
47.
Week. Yeah, 47 more days. Mm. Got through that. June hit. Padres played some decent baseball, man. That helps. You know, that absolutely helps. And now we're into July, and you know it's on. It's on. I got so much stuff in July. I've got the busiest July of my entire life. In fact, I actually had to apologize to my wife yesterday because she said, because one of our favorite restaurants burned down. Ember and Rye is one of our favorite restaurants. We've been there on several anniversaries, big birthdays, and things like that. So yesterday, I was just feeling a little bit overwhelmed with everything that's going on. And she said, oh, I booked us a dinner on July 26th at Ember and Rye. And I go, we got to stop planning stuff. We have to. I'm just overwhelmed. We have something every single Friday and every Saturday. She's like, oh, okay. So she laughed, and I felt bad. So I texted her, and I said, I'm really sorry. I said, you're trying to do something nice, and I, you know, just kind of crap all over it. I said, I'm really sorry. I'm going through some stuff.
It's interesting that you would consider just like dinner, though, as like the tipping point of what you can and can't handle. Because invariably, you're going to eat dinner that night anyway. This just makes it nicer and better by going to one of your favorite restaurants. I wouldn't consider that a stressful thing that you add to the calendar. I would consider that kind of a break from all the other long things you have in the month.
Yeah, for sure. But like we're going to two Padres games as a family. We're going on a little mini staycation this weekend. Then I'm going to be in LA for a couple days going to a concert the next weekend. Then Hannah and I are going to Palm Springs for my birthday. And then the week after that is that first, like it's the first Friday we'll be at our home. And so I said, it's too much. I said, we don't have to book something every Friday. But then I realized, man, what a jerk. What a jerk you are. So I texted her a nice, sweet apology. I said, I'm really sorry. That was a nice gesture on your part. And I said, she's in the chat. Lock me up. Real monster here. I know. I just felt like such a butt when I did it. So I'm sorry. Please re-up our reservation, and I'm looking forward to it. It's a delicious
restaurant.
Too late.
It's booked up completely.
Yeah, but
now.
It's booked. You can't get it until September now. So, yeah, it's just one of my many a-hole moments over the weekend. It happens. It happens. So I'm trying to be better. But once I get, like, once I start feeling like the calendar is really, really full, that's when the panic sets in for me. And it's weird. I'm weird like that. You know, it's funny. I ran into a beloved, dear friend. I was at a birthday party, and I ran into our pal Tim Flannery, and it was for his granddaughter. And I didn't know this about Timmy, but we share the same affliction in that we are good for about an hour. Anywhere we go, we're really good for about an hour. So I saw him, and I went and sat down next to him, and I just started wearing them out for stories. And boy, did I get them. I mean, you sit down, Flan, how you doing? Oh, brother, it's good to see you. Oh, it's great to see you, too. Anyway, back in 71, and I'm like, yes! And he just, so for the first 50 minutes of this birthday party, he just started firing baseball stories at me. I mean, he told me one that will knock your socks off. And I said, Ben's out of town. On a Monday. It's actually next Monday.
Correct.
Week from today. Yeah. Ben's going to be out of town. I said, Flan, will you come in? And he said, yeah. So he's going to come in and shoot the breeze for the last half of the show. And when you sit and talk to Tim Flannery, you get that old baseball spirit, the heart, you know? The heart of the game. Guy will tell you straight up to your face, was not the most talented baseball player. Wanted it more than anyone. And the stories that he tells, and he told me, this was really sweet. He said, how's your boy? And because he knows Bo pretty well. He's been at several of the T-ball games I've coached, and he's always remarked, he goes, I love his motor. I mean, the dude's constantly hustling. He's dialed in for a 5-6-year-old.
That's a big compliment from Tim Flynn.
100%. Yeah. And he said to me, he goes, is he getting over it yet? And I go, no. I said, we went from one camp to a practice, and it still was enough. He wanted grounders when we got home. He goes, that is just how I was. He goes, and they all used to tell me, you're going to burn out. He goes, guess what? I still haven't burned out on the game. He would go back and coach. If they needed him today, he would go back and coach. That's how much he loves it. So when I'm with him, I am filled. Like, my spirit is full with, like, baseball. Like, just the love and the heart of the game. And I feel like the game is missing some of that these days.
There are a lot of kids who do burn out early, but there's the occasional few that just have an endless supply of, I just want to do this. Tiger Woods is the first example I think of.
Yeah.
Golfing from basically the age of one.
You know the difference, though.
And still, to this day, if his legs would allow it, he'd be out there every single week playing. Because that's just, he just loves golf, and he loves doing it.
You know, and the thing is, too, is I read a lot about how champions are made and things like that. Not that, you know, I don't think my son's going to be a big leaguer. I don't. It's minuscule, the odds. But I read a lot about how dads were with their kids. And you read about, like, Bryce Harper's dad. Tyrant. But, I mean, if the end game is Bryce Harper, you did pretty good. I read about Earl Woods. I'm tyrant. I mean, straight up. And you do get the sense, though, that a lot of those were the dad saying, get your ass up, get your ass outside, we're doing this. I don't have to do that with him. I don't ever have to do it. I've never asked him to take grounders. Never once. I've never asked him to go get some swings. He always comes to me, which is great. Because I don't feel like the tyrant in the whole thing. So, I ripped him fungos in the street yesterday. We got done. He was diving around on the concrete, making plays. We get inside. We chill for about 20 minutes. And he looks at me. He goes, grounders? He wanted more. And I'm like, holy smoke. So, it's cool, man. Being around Flan makes me feel good. The stories are just through the roof. So, excited about that for next month.
Yeah, I think you handle it the right way. Because you encourage but never require.
No.
I think for every Tiger Woods, there's 500 kids like Todd Marinovich, whose dad pushed them too hard, you know, probably wrecked their life to a certain extent because they were trying to live out their dreams through their kids by, you know, I never made it pro, but you're going to make it pro. My disappointment of not getting there, I'm going to live vicariously through you. And that almost never works do it that way.
The best baseball player that I ever knew growing up, he was a year younger than me. He got drafted. Didn't even have a cup of coffee in the bigs. It was like an espresso shot, but he made it. He's one of the, whatever, 21,000.
Yeah.
And which is great, but, dude, growing up, like, his dad was so hard on him. He's like, oh, I can't, you know, we'd go out for pizza or something as a team. He's like, oh, I can't. My dad's got me on a diet.
Oh.
We'd all stay the night at somebody's house, have a party. He'd be doing push-ups in the corner because my dad says I got to do 200 push-ups every night. And we're just like, you nerd.
That's tough, dude.
But, like, he made it.
He made it.
So I don't know if it was right or wrong. But from the outside, I was like, man, that sucks.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%.
You can't just be a dude.
Can't just be a kid. Yeah, it's really tough. But he's, you know, he's staying really committed to it. But anyway, yeah, Flan's got that thing where the anxiety kicks in after a while. And he's like, all right, that's it for me. You guys know me. I mean, I'm an hour. I'm an hour tops. And I made it 3 hours at this little kid's birthday party. Thank you to Flan for helping me kill that first hour. But not easy, man. It's not easy. Once I start to feel like it's all getting fulled up, I start to panic, start to fan myself, you know, be like, I got to go. I got to go. I wish I wasn't that way. But I know a lot of people can relate to that out there. How was everybody else's weekend around here? What'd you guys do?
Mine was quiet. Got some stuff done around the house. Went to Costco. They already had all the Halloween merchandise out, which seemed, I know, it always seems earlier every single year. It was still June. And there's pumpkins.
Target, Walmart,
witches,
Costco.
And
just
I'm going,
leave them all out. Leave the Christmas decorations.
All year.
Have a Christmas section.
I mean, we
have a Halloween
July,
section.
August, September, and then October.
Yeah, full
and all
month
of October before we actually get to Halloween. That's 4 months. That's a third of the year. We're a third of the year away from Halloween. A full third of the year. I'm not going to buy a giant jack-o'-lantern at Costco on June 29th. I'm just not going to do it.
What about costumes, though? You want to get your costume. If they have costumes, you want to get it now. But if you have little kids, they're going to change their mind 15 times. My kids, Taylor just wants to be David Bowie again. And I'm like, you get to mix it up, bro. You can mix it up anytime you want, and you can be whatever you want. And I'm like, do you want to be like a different version of David Bowie? He goes, no, Ziggy Stardust. I go, all right, well, again, we're going to have the same picture of you, but if you love it, you love it. So that's kind of what he wants to do. But, yeah, man, it was low-key. I took two naps yesterday, which was incredible. The post-breakfast nap is elite. You wake up, took the kids to Home State in Oceanside. We had some breakfast tacos. Hannah slept in. Took them there. By the time we got home, I go, I'm ready for another nap.
Really?
Yeah, so I got in. I slept for an hour or so. Woke up to the early Padres game and was like, this is great.
The first was the second nap? Or
no, that was the first nap.
That was the first nap. When did the second nap then come?
When Taylor went down for his nap at 1.
Really? And you were tired enough that you could, after napping before the Padres game, you were tired enough to nap again immediately after the Padres game?
Yeah, absolutely
gassed. But you didn't play in the Padres game.
No, I was just gassed. completely gassed from the weekend. You know, I feel rested today. I feel great. Hopefully everybody's feeling good out there. We got a good show for you today. Benny will set the menu for you next, and we'll get into it, man. I'm very pleased. I was very pleased. Like, two games in a hostile environment where you literally didn't even have to go pour yourself a drink because you were nervous about the win. I mean, just two absolute bangers of a game, followed by a little bit of a clunker yesterday, but one that you were still in. You were a hit away.
Yeah, you were never totally thrilled about their chances yesterday, but you take the series win and move on. We'll set the menu, get you ready for a good Monday, obviously. Short week for us, like most of you, with the 4th of July coming up on Thursday, so we got a lot to pack in over the next 3 days. Glad you're with us on a Monday morning. It's Ben, it's Woods, it's Paul. We're going until 10 o'clock. Thank you for joining us on San Diego's number one sports station. Check traffic with Kelly right now on 97.3 The Fan.
If you want the real story behind the NFL, you need the Stinkin' Truth Podcast. Three-time Super Bowl champ Mark Schlereth breaks down the biggest plays, the biggest games, and the untold stories that make this game what it is. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
For a couple of weeks there, it just felt like every Padres game was a soap opera of, comebacks, walk-offs, disappointment, heartbreak. The Washington National Series with everything that went on there. And now the last few days have been relatively drama-free for your San Diego Padres. Two very drama-free wins and one mostly drama-free loss yesterday to the Boston Red Sox as they take 2 out of 3 over the weekend to open their road trip. Another day off today for your San Diego Padres. And then they will finish their road trip. Last three road games of the first half of the season in Texas against the defending World Series champion Rangers tomorrow, Wednesday, and Thursday. 4th of July Thursday in Texas in Arlington. So, I don't know. How do you feel about less drama in a baseball game? I mean, we watch baseball for the, you know, for the entertainment, for the excitement. And somehow when a game doesn't have a lot of excitement, it's almost a relief. At least for me.
Well, if you win, yeah, man. Those games, you know, the games Friday night and Saturday night, I looked at the betting lines on both, and we were pretty heavy underdogs. I took them both nights and was like, that was like the easiest money I've won all year. You know, I looked at it and thought, this team's playing red hot right now, and
so yeah, were the Red Sox. They were going into that series,
and they're going up against some good arms. They just I had that feeling. I just had that feeling that the guys were going to play really well, and boy, did they! I mean, everybody contributed. We're going to get into the details of all the games, but and as far as yesterday goes, yeah, pretty drama free as well. Wasn't the worst game they played this season by any stretch, but you wanted to get the drive that nail home yesterday and get that sweep. Of course, for us,
the problem is too many of those games like yesterday where you're like, who's Josh Winkowski?
Yeah.
Too many of those, that's when you start wanting to like just pull your hair out.
Exactly. But it's also like, man, we beat Tanner Houck to a real good the other night and took care of Pivetta and all these guys. Oh, he's not giving up a home run and so-and-so. I mean, we just laid the wood to those guys those first two games in Fenway. Huge contingent of Padre fans out there as well. Bro, after a long-ass, pretty heavy week with the fights and everything else and a lot of drama and everything else and Shilt on Friday. It was so nice to watch them go into Fenway and handle business, man. And you know, I know we're back to the, well, it's fine. We won the series, but it is fine that we won that series. Because is this what the mighty Red Sox have? This is what they sound like now after the Padres get done with them. Boy, it hits different, doesn't it? I don't know if there's a better song though. For like, if you're a team and that's like your team song, I don't know if there's one better than Shipping Up to Boston. Does any song?
Isn't Sweet Caroline really their team song though?
It's their seventh inning song.
Love this new film.
I love
it. It's the rough
best.
Weekend.
Rough weekend for old Caroline.
Where it began, I can't begin to know.
It's the best bit.
Nothing I know, it's growing stronger.
I feel like I'm on mushrooms right now. Did I take DMT?
Wasn't the spring.
Some guy in a Neil Diamond concert in the 70s gets dosed with something. He's like, this sucks, man. This sucks bad. No, it was great. I mean, hey, look. I like a good old-fashioned ass-kicking. Who are we to sit here and say, boy, those 9-1 wins are sure getting old. I mean, you must be out of your mind. I really prefer the 4-3 or the 5-4 walk-off. No! Give me the 9-1.
Exactly.
Give me the 9-1 drubbing.
Exactly.
Where I can sit back and go, oh, I mean, look, you know, I tweeted it the other day, and it was joking when I said it, but behind every joke, there's a little truth. You know, we were up 10 runs, and I went, something tells me we're still going to have to get Bob Suarez up. Robert Suarez got to go to Boston and eat clam chowder. He didn't have to do a damn thing. Fantastic day for a fantastic weekend for him. Nice little vacation. And you reset and got some guys some rest. It was great. It was a great, great series in Boston. You can't look at it any other way. I don't want to hear any. We should have swept. That's a good-ass team that you're playing up there. And they got you yesterday. Your ace, our ace to this point, did not have his best stuff yesterday. Made a costly mistake to Rafi Devers, and it happens.
Yeah, we'll talk about Matt Waldron and his visit to Fenway Park. A lot of Tim Wakefield talk during the game yesterday as well. Ultimately, though, it was a good month of June for the San Diego Padres. They finished by winning 9 of their last 11 games in the month. They're 4 games above 500, currently occupying one of the playoff spots in the National League. The only thing they didn't do in June, and this is more of a Ben and Woods sort of Monday morning problem, they did not win any Sunday games.
I know.
In the month of June,
not
which
one.
Means every Monday morning we get a losing edition of a Padres wrap-up, which we will have for you coming up here
it's
in about
a shame
5 or 6 minutes.
Yeah. You guys can't sandwich? Give me a sandwich? You know, a win-loss
win? We don't work on the Sabbath anymore?
Yeah,
what's
happening?
Come on.
Seriously.
Why is the Sunday game always the toughest one to win?
Y'all always finding something to complain about, ain't you? I swear to God. Always complaining about something.
That's correct.
Yeah. He's going to murder us.
But we'll have lots of good baseball to talk about as well in our 7 o'clock hour. Take on Woods. We still have opportunities to win that getaway to the Fontainebleau Las Vegas. Concert tickets, $150 food and beverage credit poolside. That's at 7:10. Don't do this at 7:20, our normal segments, of course. Second half of the show on Monday, we will catch up with in-season Sammy, talk about his weekend covering the San Diego Padres as well. Some headlines in our Rindle report, but mostly some baseball talk from over the weekend. Lots of Padres news and notes to get to, and just try to, you know, you got what, 1.5 more weeks here to the All-Star, or 2 more weeks until the All-Star break. You got one road series and then one homestand of 8 games, so you got 11 games left until the All-Star break. Just finish out the rest of the first half somehow with a winning record over those 11 games. Stay above 500. You're in good shape going into that last stretch run post-All-Star break.
Yeah, and everyone's talking about all the off days, and I think inherently they are a great thing for a team that's beat up. And that's our on-paper analysis. Right. On paper, this is a great,
pitching
great
especially.
Thing. Pitching especially.
Now, when your offense is as hot as it is, off days aren't necessarily the best thing.
But, you know, you got a banged-up Jerkson Profar. You got a banged-up Manny Machado. You've got a banged-up Luis Arraez. Those are three pretty important pieces for you moving forward. But, man, you know, I got excited about it. And I do love the off days, and they deserve them. They've earned them. They've played a buttload of baseball the first half of the season. But, man, I looked at that July schedule and went, whoo, mama. This is it's going to be pretty nasty. Three with Texas,
yeah.
Then the Diamondbacks
tough
at home
this week, yeah. For sure.
And
tough.
Then a couple with Seattle. Then the Braves. Then you get a break. Then you go to Cleveland, who's unreal. Then you go to Washington, which there it's going to be. James Wood's going to be up. He's making his major league debut today. Then you got the Orioles. Then you got the Dodgers to round out the month. So you know, some more great baseball is going to need to be played.
The good news is though, is because they had this stretch. You don't need to go on a huge winning streak
right.
against these teams. You just have to not give it back and not have that stretch
five
where
gamer.
You lose 6 of 7 or yep. 5 in a row, which has been the problem through the first half of the season. Have they gotten over that? That'll be the next sign to see if the Padres really are kind of taking those strides and turning the corner that Mike Schilt always said they were going to.
Sure.
You know, all along he said, we're going to keep getting better. This is not the end product. It's going to keep getting better as the season goes on. And so far, he has proved pretty prescient about what his team is going to look like over the course of the season.
He's kind of criticism, but we play better against good teams. Yeah, we have to this point. There is no reason to think that we'll continue to do so. We were playing lights out on the road. Then we stopped. We were playing poorly at home. Then they got better at home. So there's no trends for the San Diego Padres that are going to remain true for the entire season. That's one thing that I think, that's one thing that I can say we've learned our lesson, right? That if it's going a certain way, the chances are it will not continue going that way. So
And I think there's a big reason for that. And we're finally kind of understanding it. Let's talk about it when we come back in our Padres wrap up, because yesterday was kind of the perfect example of both the strengths and the potential flaws of this San Diego Padres team. We'll get to that coming up next Monday morning. Glad to have you with us on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. So the funny thing is, yesterday's game, while it was a 4-1 loss compared to two overwhelming wins on Friday and Saturday, wasn't that different from the other two games.
Huh?
Yeah, I know you're going, what that doesn't make any sense, Ben. Doesn't make any sense at all.
How many runs did we score?
One.
Okay.
And they scored 11 and 9. How?
20 runs.
Speaking of somebody that's taken DMT this morning.
No, but this is why the Padres will always have you kind of on the edge of your seat. The way that, you know, they have constructed their offense, they're going to have to outscore their opponent to win the game.
That's right, John.
The fact that they generally, when they rally, they have to string together many, many hits together for a lot of their rallies. They had a 9-run, 9-1. I mean, they only scored in one inning on Friday.
I know.
They only scored in one inning on Friday.
It was a good one, though.
They also scored in one inning on Sunday. It just, you know, when the other team gets a big, you know, comes up with a pitch and gets a double play, kills that rally really quickly, well, all of a sudden the Padres just don't do much offensively. And yesterday they had 8 hits. They had lead runners on all day long. They just weren't able to then string a couple of more hits together like they did in really just two big rallies. They had a 6-run rally on Saturday, a 9-run rally on Friday, And that was the difference in the entire series. Those two really great innings. Otherwise,
well, I mean, do you think Boston radio this morning is going, well, if we just erase that 9-run inning and we erase that 6-run inning, we got them right where we want them. You know, I don't think so. I don't know.
I'm talking about Patriots OTAs.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Who are the Celtics going to be?
Who are the Padres? I don't even know they still had a team. Yeah, I see what you're saying. You know, but yeah, you know, I don't want to come in here this morning after the run that they've been on and be like, all right, let's nitpick some stuff. But I think there's a couple things you can look at yesterday that absolutely made me pull my hair out for sure. I think you guys know what I'm about to do, but should we play the wrap up first?
Sure. Let's get to our Padres wrap up of yesterday's game. We'll go through a little Mount Waldron talk and more coming up right after this check of traffic on 97.3 The Fan.
It's a shame if they lose.
Oh, a shame indeed.
It's a complete crap.
Oh, I did not like that.
Here are the lowlights from yesterday's game.
Are you kidding me?
Boo.
It's the Padres wrap-up, presented by Hummel Casino. With thrilling slots and tables and all the best rewards, Hummel Casino has all the fun you're looking for. Hummel Casino. Fun above all else.
We'll give it 16 minutes of salt and then we'll, you know, get back on the bump and figure it out.
It's not your fault.
And the 2-1 pitch into the air to left field and deep. Profar will turn around to watch up at the monster, and it's gone. A home run. Two-run shot for Rafael Devers, his second of the series. And the Red Sox have a 2-0 lead in the bottom of the first inning, their first lead since they were up 1-0 in the fourth on Friday. 2-1 pitch is way outside, going to go to the backstop, going to get a run home. Abreu charging in from third, slides in head first. A wild pitch on a knuckleball, and a 3-0 Red Sox lead. 1-1 pitch, hit in the air, deep down the right field line, towards the pole, gone, a home run. Darren Duran, a lead shot here in the fifth inning. He has gone deep back-to-back games. Kind of a carbon copy shot down that right field line. And the Red Sox lead is 4-0. 3-1 to Kim. The pitch is swung on and hit fair up the left field line. That's going to roll and roll to the corner. Merrill racing around 30, scores easily. Kim into second base. It's an RBI double. And the Padres are on the board here in the seventh inning. It's 4-1. Kim swings, hits it in the air to left center field. Long run, Rafaela into the gap. He's there, and he makes the catch to end the game. 1-2-3, top of the ninth for Kenley Jansen. His 16th save of the year. Padres cannot complete the sweep here at Fenway, but they come to Boston and take 2 out of 3, as they have still won 9 out of their last 11 games.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, they got the lead, you know, put some swings on Waldy.
Right.
Were able to add on a little bit. Had some guys on, just couldn't cash in, you know. It was a good series. Bullpen was really good, you know. Comes in, Waldy gets his guys, and Colwick with the clean six, and Morihon and Estrada got out there and got some work, so that was good and clean, and with zeros. So, just couldn't push enough the cross today.
There you go.
There you go, 1-for-8 with runners in scoring position after dominating in those situations on Friday and Saturday, and the Padres lose the series finale 4-1. And not going to pin it all on Matt Waldron, who's been so good, but clearly there was something extra for him going into that game yesterday. And, you know, sometimes that can be a good thing.
Yeah.
You've got that extra motivation, the extra emotion that really fuels you, but sometimes it can also be too much.
Take you out of your game a little.
Exactly. And I think there may have been a little bit of that. I don't know if he'd agree or not, but clearly, guy was very emotional about pitching at Fenway Park. Tim Wakefield, where they, you know, honored him, and Tim Wakefield had helped Matt Waldron with the knuckleball, and obviously that had been an important and special relationship for Matt Waldron to go back to the mound where Tim Wakefield pitched. They've got Wakefield's number up there atop the Green Monster after he passed away. Very sad story from the offseason. And it meant a lot for him to go out there yesterday. And when that happens, especially for a knuckleballer, you know, what I've always heard is that the last thing you want as a knuckleballer is anything that really throws you off that normal, very precise rhythm that you need to take the spin off of a baseball. The humidity probably didn't help as well. Apparently, it was like the stickiest game of the year for the San Diego Padres.
You could feel it, man, through the TV. I mean, you know, before the rain started dumping, all their jerseys were just soaked.
And he was wearing the long sleeves to try to keep the ball, you know,
changing
ball dry, no dripping onto his hands because of the grip that he needs for the for the, and I'm not trying to make excuses for Matt Waldron.
I'm not going to alibi it.
It clearly seemed to affect him. And I thought in the first inning in particular, and part of it was the broadcast, which Don and Mudd were doing a good job, but he walked, he walked the third batter. So he put someone on for Rafael Devers.
Can't do it.
And he gets deep into the count, and they're talking about the fact that Devers is such a good, fastball hitter.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's nasty.
So better not miss with a fastball to Rafael Devers.
And to be honest with you, he didn't. He threw it outer third, but he covers every pitch.
But I think the situation there is if you hadn't just walked the guy before, and now it's 3 balls and 2 strikes, right? You don't want to walk another guy.
Right, so you throw
a heater.
You don't
know if that knuckleball is on yet, so you try to get a fastball past him. And he, of course, doesn't hit it a mile. I think the XBA was 200. But it's the wall. It's the green monster. It's a fly ball. Probably an out in a lot of parks, but there it's a home run, and now you're behind 2-0, and you're playing catch up the rest of the game.
Yeah, Devers should literally, if you're a knuckleball pitcher, he should never see a fastball. I mean, he'll swing at stuff out of the zone, and the knuckleball. I mean, I get it. If it's not working, walk him. walk him. You take your chances with the next guy. You cannot. And I know the reason that Waldron's been so effective is that he's not just up there flipping knuckleballs. His 91 looks 98 after you've seen a couple of those bad boys. He's got a really good sweeper as well. So he likes to use all of his arsenal.
And getting ahead with that
which
makes him the knuckleball just that much more effective because you can't take it with 2 strikes.
Yeah.
Because it might flutter right into the zone.
There's no question.
So you have to start swinging, and it gives him such an advantage that he never really took advantage of yesterday.
Yeah, and never saw that heater, 91, I think, on the outer third, and just went boop, and flicked it over the monster like he's done before and like he'll do, probably 400 more times in his career. He is an elite, elite baseball player. So, yeah, man, that's kind of the one guy you look at in their lineup. They have some really good players. Jaron Duran's a really good player. They have that rookie that they have is really good as well. They have some good players, but you can't throw that guy, knee-high fastballs on the outer third. He's going to destroy you, and he did. God, I love watching him play. I love watching him hit. I love everything about him. I just wish he didn't do it against us yesterday. So that one kind of bugged me there. You almost kind of felt it was gonna happen. But the thing I think that made me the most insane, and you guys probably know what it is, it's the fifth. Jackson Merrill gets on another knock for Jackson Merrill.
3 more hits yesterday.
Hi, this is Jackson Merrill.
Hi, Jackson.
What a weekend.
You are a stud. We're going to get into your return to your favorite ballpark. But holy smokes, man, when Jackson gets on and there's nobody out and Ha-Sung Kim comes up and just lays down a sack bunt, I was like, you're down 3 at that point. It's in the 5th inning. And Kimmy's been swinging a little bit better, but that you can't give up an out there. The sacrifice, and that's what it was. It was a sack bunt. They went down as a sack bunt. I don't think he was trying to bunt for a hit. He was giving himself up in that situation. Playing for one run when you're down 3 made me nuts. I mean,
And my son had a great point. He goes, Kyle Higashioka is the next batter.
Right.
He's all or nothing.
Correct. Right. Yeah, and then you know who's after him?
The guy hits like no singles.
You know who's after him? Bryce Johnson.
So,
is that his name? Bryce Johnson? He's next.
What
so,
are
like,
you trying
swing
to put
away,
a
bro.
Runner on second base for a guy who has had like 5 singles all year? The guy's hitting home runs. He can be on first base.
Yeah, and could get a 3-run homer.
Kalagashioka can drive him home just as easily. Just not getting singles out of that guy. So
one of those
you're,
weird.
You're
kind
absolutely
of...
right, Woods. A sacrifice bunt makes almost zero sense in that situation. And Ha-Sung Kim has been hitting better lately. He's hitting over 300 this month. Has started to heat up, and to give up an out and an at bat there
makes
turned
no
out
sense,
to be an inning in which the Padres did not score again.
Yep.
Didn't make a lot of sense.
No, you're not tied. You're not trying to scratch across a run against a really great pitcher. I mean, you're putting the ball in play against that guy. It just didn't make any sense. Of course, Kimmy comes up, rips one down the line in his next AB, and I'm like, oh man, it's just one of those kind of brain farts. Maybe he wasn't comfortable, wasn't seeing it very well, thought, what can I do to help the team? I understand all that. I do. And I very much don't think it was called from the bench. I think that was a player decision. I'm going to lay one down here, get the guy over and see if we can get something going. But, I've told you guys before, I am not averse to bunting for a hit or anything like that, squeezes, stuff like that, no problem, man. But down 3 in the 5th inning with no one who's up behind you, you got to have a little more situational awareness there if you're Ha-Sung Kim. And I hated that bunt. Other than that, you know, hey, listen, great, great series.
And Winkowski was good, yeah. Just because you hadn't heard of him before.
Yeah, he's good.
Thought he pitched better than the first two guys for the Red Sox in that series for sure. Five innings, four hits, no runs. Padres didn't strike out much. He only had one strikeout. I think they struck out four times the whole game. They put the ball in play just like they did the other games. It just, you know, wasn't finding the holes. Ground balls, you know, right to guys with runners on for double plays. And that was the difference in the game yesterday. As Mike Schilt did point out, bullpen looked good. I think they ended the seven straight scoreless innings.
That's great.
Which was nice to see from a bullpen that's had its ups and downs over the course of the year. So, yeah, a positive you can take out there in addition to, of course, a series victory for the San Diego Padres. Now, do we have that NESN Matt Waldron audio, Pauly? So, I wasn't sure whether this was a media kind of generated story. I knew that Matt Waldron had spoken with Tim Wakefield.
They're friendly with, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, like a Zoom call. But I didn't know, okay, is this just a cool storyline because he's coming back? Or is this something that really means...
He sent over the post, and my initial reaction was, get over yourselves, Boston.
Was this something that really meant a lot to Matt Waldron to go back to Boston?
Yes.
Where Tim Wakefield... And honestly, apparently it did. It meant quite a bit to him because... So the funny thing is, yesterday's game... While it was a 4-1 loss compared to two overwhelming wins on Friday and Saturday, wasn't that different from the other two games?
Huh?
Yeah, I know you're going, what that doesn't make any sense, Ben. Doesn't make any sense at all.
How many runs did we score?
One.
Okay.
And they scored 11 and 9. How?
20 runs.
Speaking of somebody that's taken DMT this morning.
No, but this is why the Padres will always have you kind of on the edge of your seat. The way that you know, they have constructed their offense. They're going to have to outscore their opponent to win the game.
That's right, John.
The fact that they generally, when they rally, they have to string together many, many hits together for a lot of their rallies. They had a 9-run, 9-1. I mean, they only scored in one inning on Friday.
I know.
They only scored in one inning on Friday.
It was a good one, though.
They also scored in one inning on Sunday. It just... You know, when the other team gets a big, you know, comes up with a pitch and gets a double play, kills that rally really quickly, well, all of a sudden the Padres just don't do much offensively. And yesterday they had eight hits. They had lead runners on all day long. They just weren't able to then string a couple of more hits together like they did in really just two big rallies. They had a 6-run rally on Saturday, a 9-run rally on Friday. And that was the difference in the entire series. Those two really great innings. Otherwise,
well, I mean, do you think Boston radio this morning is going, well, if we just erase that 9-run inning and we erase that 6-run inning, we got them right where we want them? You know, I don't think so. I don't know.
I mean, talking about Patriots OTAs.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Who are the Celtics?
Who are the Padres? I don't even know they still had a team. Yeah, I see what you're saying. You know, but. Yeah, you know, I don't want to come in here this morning after the run that they've been on and be like, all right, let's nitpick some stuff. But I think there's a couple things you can look at yesterday that absolutely made me pull my hair out for sure. I think you guys know what I'm about to do. But should we play the wrap up first?
Sure. All let's right. get to our Padres wrap up of yesterday's game. We'll go through a little Matt Waldron talk and more coming up right after this check of traffic on 97.3 The Fan.
It's a shame if they lose.
A shame indeed.
It's a complete crap.
Oh, I did not like that.
Here are the lowlights from yesterday's game.
Are you kidding me?
Boo.
It's the Padres wrap-up, presented by Hummel Casino. With thrilling slots and tables and all the best rewards, Hummel Casino has all the fun you're looking for. Hummel Casino, fun above all else.
We'll give it 16 minutes of salt, and then we'll, you know, get back on the bump and figure it out.
It's not your fault.
And the 2-1 pitch into the air to left field and deep. Profar will turn around to watch up at the monster, and it's gone. A home run. 2-run shot for Rafael Devers, his second of the series. And the Red Sox have a 2-0 lead in the bottom of the first inning. Their first lead since they were up 1-0 in the fourth on Friday. 2-1 pitch is way outside. Going to go to the backstop. Going to get a run home. Abreu charging in from third, slides in head first. A wild pitch on a knuckleball and a 3-0 Red Sox lead. 1-1 pitch, hit in the air, deep down the right field line, towards the pole, gone, a home run. Darren Duran, a lead shot here in the fifth inning. He has gone deep back-to-back games, kind of a carbon copy shot down that right field line, and the Red Sox lead is 4-0. 3-1 to Kim. The pitch is swung on and hit fair up the left field line. That's going to roll and roll to the corner. Merrill racing around third. He scores easily. Kim into second base. It's an RBI double. And the Padres are on the board here in the seventh inning. It's 4-1. Kim swings, hits it in the air to left center field. Long run, Rafaela into the gap. He's there, and he makes the catch to end the game. 1-2-3, top of the ninth for Kenley Jansen. His 16th save of the year. Padres cannot complete the sweep here at Fenway, but they come to Boston and take 2 out of 3, as they have still won 9 out of their last 11 games.
I think, you know, they got the lead, you know, put some swings on Waldy.
Right.
Were able to add on a little bit. Had some guys on, just couldn't cash in, you know. It was a good series. Bullpen was really good, you know. Comes in, Waldy gets his guys, and Colwick with the clean six, and Morihon and Estrada got out there and got some work, so that was good and clean, and with zeros. So, just couldn't push enough the crawl today.
There you go.
There you go, 1-for-8 with runners in scoring position after dominating in those situations on Friday and Saturday, and the Padres lose the series finale 4-1. And not going to pin it all on Matt Waldron, who's been so good, but clearly there was something extra for him going into that game yesterday. And, you know, sometimes that can be a good thing.
Yeah.
You've got that extra motivation, the extra emotion that really fuels you, but sometimes it can also be too much.
Take you out of your game a little.
Exactly. And I think there may have been a little bit of that. I don't know if he'd agree or not, but clearly, guy was very emotional about pitching at Fenway Park. Tim Wakefield, where they, you know, honored him, and Tim Wakefield had helped Matt Waldron with the knuckleball, and obviously that had been an important and special relationship for Matt Waldron to go back to the mound where Tim Wakefield pitched. They've got Wakefield's number up there atop the Green Monster after he passed away. Very sad story from the offseason. And it meant a lot for him to go out there yesterday. And when that happens, especially for a knuckleballer, you know, what I've always heard is that the last thing you want as a knuckleballer is anything that really throws you off that normal, very precise rhythm that you need to take the spin off of a baseball. The humidity probably didn't help as well. Apparently, it was like the stickiest game of the year for the San Diego Padres.
You could feel it, man, through the TV. I mean, before the rain started dumping, all their jerseys were just soaked.
And he was wearing the long sleeves to try to keep the ball, you know,
changing
ball
them out.
Dry, no dripping onto his hands because of the grip that he needs for the And I'm not trying to make excuses for Matt Waldron.
I'm not going to alibi it.
It clearly seemed to affect him, and I thought in the first inning in particular, and part of it was the broadcast, which Don and Mudd were doing a good job, but he walked he walked the third batter, so he put someone on for Rafael Devers.
Can't do it.
And he gets deep into the count, and they're talking about the fact that Devers is such a good, what is it, fastball hitter.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's nasty.
So better not miss with a fastball to Rafael Devers.
And to be honest with you, he didn't. He threw it outer third, but he covers every pitch.
But I think the situation there is if you hadn't just walked the guy before, and it's 3 balls and 2 strikes, right? You don't want to walk another guy.
Right, so you throw
a heater.
Don't
know if that knuckleball is on yet, so you try to get a fastball past him, and he, of course, doesn't hit it a mile. I think the XBA was 200, but it's the wall. It's the Green Monster. It's a fly ball, probably an out in a lot of parks, but there it's a home run, and now you're behind 2-0, and you're playing catch up the rest of the game.
Yeah, Devers should literally, if you're a knuckleball pitcher, he should never see a fastball. I mean, he'll swing at stuff out of the zone, and the knuckleball, I mean, I get it. If it's not working, walk him. You know, walk him, you take your chances with the next guy. You cannot, and I know the reason that Waldron's been so effective is that he's not just up there flipping knuckleballs. His 91 looks 98 after you've seen a couple of those bad boys. He's got a really good sweeper as well, so he likes to use all of his arsenal.
And getting ahead with that
which
makes him, the knuckleball, just that much more effective, because you can't take it with 2 strikes.
Yeah.
Because it might flutter right into the zone.
There's no question.
So you have to start swinging, and it gives him such an advantage that he never really took advantage of yesterday.
Yeah, and never saw that heater, 91, I think, on the outer third, and just went boop and flicked it over the monster like he's done before and like he'll do, you know, probably 400 more times in his career. He is an elite, elite baseball player. So, yeah, man, that's kind of the one guy you look at in their lineup. They have some really good players. You know, Jaron Duran's a really good player. They have that rookie that they have is really good as well. They have some good players, but you can't throw that guy, you know, knee-high fastballs on the outer third. He's going to destroy you, and he did. I love watching him play. I love watching him hit. I love everything about him. I just wish he didn't do it against us yesterday. So that one kind of bugged me there. You almost kind of felt it was gonna happen. But the thing I think that made me the most insane, and you guys probably know what it is, it's the fifth. Jackson Merrill gets on another knock for Jackson Merrill.
Three more hits yesterday.
Hi, this is Jackson Merrill.
Hi, Jackson. What a weekend. You are a stud. We're going to get into your return to your favorite ballpark. But holy smokes, man, when Jackson gets on and there's nobody out and Ha-Sung Kim comes up and just lays down a sack bunt, I was like, you're down three at that point. It's in the fifth inning. And Kimmy's been swinging a little bit better, you know, but that you can't give up an out there. The sacrifice, and that's what it was. It was a sack bunt. They went down as a sack bunt. I don't think he was trying to bunt for a hit. He was giving himself up in that situation. Playing for one run when you're down three made me nuts. I mean, nuts.
And my son had a great point. He goes, Kyle Higashioka is the next batter.
Right.
He's all or nothing.
Correct. Yeah, and then you know who's after him?
The guy hits like no singles.
You know who's after him? Bryce Johnson.
So,
is that his name? Bryce Johnson? He's next.
What
so,
are
like,
you trying
swing
to put
away,
a
bro.
Runner on second base for a guy who has had like five singles all year? The guy's hitting home runs. He can be on first base.
Yeah,
and
could get a three-run homer.
Higashioka can drive him home just as easily. You're just not getting singles out of that guy. So
one of those
you're absolutely right, Woods. A sacrifice bunt makes almost zero sense in that situation. And Ha-Sung Kim has been hitting better lately. He's hitting over 300 this month. Has started to heat up, and to give up an out and an at bat there
makes
turned
no
out
sense,
to be an inning in which the Padres did not score again.
Yep.
Didn't make a lot of sense.
No, you're not tied. You're not trying to scratch across a run against a really great pitcher. I mean, you're putting the ball in play against that guy. It just didn't make any sense. Of course, Kimmy comes up, rips one down the line in his next AB, and I'm like, oh, man. It's just one of those kind of brain farts. Maybe he wasn't comfortable, wasn't seeing it very well, thought, what can I do to help the team? I understand all that. I do. And I very much don't think it was called from the bench. I think that was a player decision. I'm going to lay one down here, get the guy over, and see if we can get something going. But, I've told you guys before, I am not averse to bunting for a hit or anything like that, squeezes, stuff like that, no problem, man. But down three in the fifth inning with no one who's up behind you, you got to have a little more situational awareness there if you're Ha-Sung Kim. And I hated that bunt. Other than that, hey, listen, great series.
And Winkowski was good, yeah. Just because you hadn't heard of him before.
Yeah, he's good.
Thought he pitched better than the first two guys for the Red Sox in that series for sure. Five innings, four hits, no runs. Padres didn't strike out much. He only had one strikeout. I think they struck out four times the whole game. They put the ball in play just like they did the other games. It just, wasn't finding the holes. Ground balls, right to guys with runners on for double plays. And that was the difference in the game yesterday. As Mike Schilt did point out, bullpen looked good. I think they ended the seven straight scoreless innings.
That's great.
Which was nice to see from a bullpen that's had its ups and downs over the course of the year. So, a positive you can take out there in addition to, of course, a series victory for the San Diego Padres. Now, do we have that NESN Matt Waldron audio, Paulie? So, I wasn't sure whether this was a media kind of generated story. I knew that Matt Waldron had spoken with Tim Wakefield.
They're friendly with, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, like a Zoom call. But I didn't know, is this just a cool storyline because he's coming back? Or is this something that really means...
He sent over the post, and my initial reaction was, get over yourselves, Boston.
Was this something that really meant a lot to Matt Waldron to go back to Boston?
Yes.
Where Tim Wakefield... And honestly, apparently it did. It meant quite a bit to him because after the game, he was pretty upset. This is from NESN-TV. Red Sox postgame in the Padres clubhouse with Matt Waldron talking about being at Fenway Park where Tim Wakefield, the knuckleballer, had pitched.
I know that Wakefield's towed that rubber, and it was you could feel it, but yeah. It was tough.
Did you take a moment to appreciate that while you're out there?
Yeah, but at the end of the day, I got to get a job done, so... And that just didn't happen.
Were you approached by anybody pregame who yelled something out or said something that conjured Tim Wakefield in some fashion?
No, I think just the pitch in general was admired and it got the respect it deserved, so.
Sweet angel, man.
I mean, yeah, I got some glossy eyes a little bit there. Yeah.
clearly emotional, but it was the post that you sent over from NESN. Padres starter Matt Waldron threw a knuckleball to start the game in honor of Tim Wakefield. He's a knuckleball thrower.
He
throws a knuckleball.
He does.
All the time.
I'm going to choose to believe it. I like stories like
that. I'm going to choose to believe the Boston media doesn't know what the hell they're talking about.
I also like...
If Robert Suarez opens the ninth with a knuckleball in honor of Tim Wakefield, yeah, his favorite pitcher growing up.
If it was Michael King...
That would be weird.
That'd be weird.
That would be
but
special.
But also cool. Yeah.
Yes, special.
But I thought, you know, listen, I thought it was a nice moment.
I thought it was...
He was very, very emotional about it.
Yeah, it was obviously, it was real and it was genuine, and that relationship meant something to Matt Waldron, and it meant something for him to be there at Fenway Park.
Mm.
But like I said, that's not necessarily the best thing for a pitcher, especially a knuckleballer who sometimes has to control their emotions a little bit more than... Yeah, if you're trying to throw 100, yeah, a little extra emotion,
a little juice,
can't necessarily hurt you. When you're trying to throw a knuckleball... A little extra adrenaline or emotion can actually be a bad thing for a pitcher.
No, but he was fine. I mean, he was fine. We didn't get the big hit. He was fine. Shortest outing in a while for Matt Waldron.
Yeah, he scored 9 or 11 runs like he did the first 2 days. And
no problem.
4 runs and, you know, 4-plus innings. You're going, not his best, but certainly plenty fine for what we needed.
Yeah.
Just didn't get the offense that they were looking for in yesterday's game. So, Matt Waldron, guessing, will be just fine moving forward. The question is what the Padres are going to do with their pitching rotation now going forward. Mike Schilt was specifically asked after the game. They did not release a starting pitcher for tomorrow's game, and Mike Schilt was asked about it, and he said, yeah, we'll tell you later. They have not, they're being very careful. It would be Adam Mazur's turn in the rotation. And the fact that they're unwilling to say that he's pitching tomorrow would lead me to believe that they are probably going to reorganize their rotation a little bit, either move someone up a day or
which would be
start someone else. I think Dylan Cease would have his turn then moved up a day with 2 off days between. We made the point last week. You can start Cease not only on regular rest, still on an extra day of rest if he goes in the series opener tomorrow and just skip over Adam Mazur. Now, with Randy Vasquez taking a line drive off the elbow.
God, I thought he was done.
They said he's okay.
Dude, him crying, walking off the ground.
Was his throwing arm?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I thought it was broken. The way he kind of crumbled.
I was very worried with his reaction.
God.
And imaging was negative, not broken, just a contusion. There's talk that he might be able to just take his normal turn, but at the same time, now you're worried about another guy who may not be 100%, lots of starting pitching injuries for the San Diego Padres. And if you move guys up, then all of a sudden you could have to pay for it on the back end if you have multiple guys who aren't available.
I mean, I'm certainly not averse to giving him a little bit more rest, you know, to make sure that there's nothing deeper in there. I mean, so if you could go, we'll talk about what it potentially could look like. But yeah, they're up against it, like most teams are right now, man. There's a lot of teams battered going into the break. So he's got to figure out a way to navigate these next few games before the All-Star break.
All right, we'll come back, play some Take on Woods, go over the fun 11-1 win on Saturday night at Fenway Park with Michael King on the mound. All coming up next year on 97.3 The Fan.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norse Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
If you want the real story behind the NFL, you need the Stinkin' Truth Podcast. 3-time Super Bowl champ Mark Schlereth breaks down the biggest plays, the biggest games, and the untold stories that make this game what it is. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.